Hello and welcome back to the Ear Fuel Podcast. As always, I'm Joel Freemark, and you can follow me on Twitter at @GetEarFuel and at The Daily Guru. The podcast is always available in the iTunes and Google Play stores under Ear Fuel and at GetEarFuel.com. This week, I am going to be digging into some of my all-time favorite female musicians and just why they're so important and so awesome. But before that, you know what we're going to do, a quick album review. The album I want to review today is the brand new release from Valerie June, and it's called The Order of Time. For those unfamiliar, Valerie's music falls somewhere between Americana, blues, soul, and bluegrass, and now and again there's even a touch of dream pop. It's an extremely distinctive sound, and I was a big fan of her last record, 2013's Pushing Against a Stone. This new album starts off in a promising way, with this dusty desolation that you can really feel. The way her voice contrasts the soundscape is just stunning, and it has a really intimate feeling. That's to say, the song feels very small and very personal, and I dig it. That leads into the track Love You Once Made, which is definitely a highlight of the album, as it has this old-school feel and some super tasty keyboard work. And then there's some awesome horns. Oh, it's just a damn good track, really. Unfortunately, after that opening pair of songs, the record settles into a less-than-stellar plateau that dominates the majority of the album. Tracks like Man Done Wrong, Just in Time, and With You aren't bad per se, but they just don't go anywhere. They almost sound incomplete at times, and they suck all the life out of the record. Though there are some strong moments, like Astral Plane and Got Soul, the best this album has to offer is at the beginning and at the end, but the subpar middle portion is going to prevent a lot of people from hearing the great work in the final three tracks. The musicianship is top-notch, as there are great touches like the slide guitar on the front door, the horns on Slip Slide on By, and I mean, there's not another voice you're going to find that's quite like Valerie's. What I think we have here is a handful of songs that would have made for a fantastic EP, but there's too much filler around them to support. Check out Long Lonely Road and Love You Once Made. If you dig them, the album is probably worth at least a few spins. If not, just go get her last album and enjoy that. Moving on. It's March, which means it's Women's History Month. Now, anyone who listens regularly or was a fan of my YouTube series is well aware that the vast majority of my all-time favorite musicians are women. Also, rarely a week goes by that I don't tell someone that it'd be really nice if we stopped qualifying female-fronted bands as, well, female-fronted bands. That is to say, can we please collectively evolve to the point that a female-fronted punk band is just, you know, a punk band? I don't think that's too much to ask, but I digress. Back to the point here. What I want to do today is discuss a handful of my all-time favorite voices across the genres and the decades. But this isn't going to be some quick hit top 10 list or something like that. I want to dig into exactly why each of these women is so significant both to music history as a whole, but also to my own musical journey as well. To be honest, I couldn't come up with a good way to rank them, so I have a list of about a dozen names in front of me, and I'm going to randomly choose them as I go and we'll see how many I can get through. And I think I want to start with one of the women for whom there is no equal. She was a trendsetter and remains one of the most recognizable and powerful voices in all of music history. Seriously, the instant you hear her voice, you know. What you want, baby, I got it. What you need, do you know I got it? All I'm asking is for a little respect when you come home. Just a little bit, baby, just a little bit. Aretha. The name alone commands more, well, respect than damn near any other in the musical pantheon. For more than six decades, yeah, Aretha Franklin's been in the music game since the 50s. Since then, she has been a force to be reckoned with, and her list of hits contains many songs that have taken on lives of their own. We already heard Respect, but there's Chain of Fools, and Since You've Been Gone, and Think, Something He Can Feel, her renditions of Spanish Harlem, The Weight, and Bridge Over Troubled Waters, and oh yeah, there's that one Carole King song that she covered. So we know the name, and we damn sure know the hits. But the question here is, what is it that makes Aretha Franklin so superior to all of the other voices of her era, and let's be honest, pretty much every voice since? What is that element that sets her so far apart and makes her songs so timeless? Well, for me, the magic, the allure of Aretha is all in the balance of contrasting elements. That is to say this, she has one of the most powerful voices in history, but she sings almost effortlessly. It's so damn natural and smooth that your jaw just sorta sits on the ground the entire time she's singing. With so many other singers, you can hear and feel the effort they're exerting to hit each note, and you can tell when they're working out of their range. But with Aretha, there seems to be no limits to her range, and like I said, the voice is just so controlled and so natural. Just consider the difference in, well, kinda everything between two consecutive tracks on her unparalleled Lady Soul album. From People Get Ready into Nikki Hokie, listen not only to the octave she's occupying, but to the actual style of her singing. So, people get ready. There's a train coming. You don't need no tickets. We'll just get on board. It's that versatility, without ever really leaving the world of funky soul, that makes Aretha so significant. She was breaking away from almost every traditional role of women in a musical setting and smashing down every wall possible. Songs like Chain of Fools and Respect remain huge anthems of empowerment, and her rendition of a number of spirituals have rarely been equaled. Yet again, another amazing contrast is in her moments of quieter reflection because they're just as powerful. I mean, when she starts singing Good to Me as I Am to You, it's just, you know what? Here, listen. This is one of my absolute favorite moments in all of music. It's just the power, the pain, the sentiment. It's all there. If you had a dollar and I had a dime, I wonder could I borrow yours? There's just nothing Aretha Franklin can't do, and the emotion in her voice, you know, the soul, even after you've heard these songs thousands of times, they still manage to move you, to make you listen, to make you feel worthy or powerful, or just feel like you're not alone. There's a reason she remains the queen of soul, and centuries from now, her voice will be studied and revered for its grace under power. Whew, okay. I could honestly go on forever about Aretha, but let's see, who do we want to go to next? Looking at the list here, you know what? Hopping about as far as we can to the other side of the musical spectrum, we arrive at another one of my all-time favorite female voices, because that's all this list really is. And this is a woman who truly makes up the rules of music and sound as she goes. Björk. I go through all this before. Now, before we go any further, just know that her name is properly pronounced Björk. Even I'm used to saying Björk, and Björk is definitely, at least people in America, what she's better known as, but that's not her name. You know, the more you know, right? Right. Björk. Anyway, I totally get that even mentioning her name is a bit polarizing, as she has a brand of music unlike anyone else in music. But I, like many people, adore the unending musical exploration of her albums and the outright vocal gymnastics she brings to every single song. When it comes to the idea of being an artist, in every sense of the word, few can hold a candle to Björk, and you'd be hard-pressed to find a musician who takes greater involvement in every aspect of her music. Before we even get to her voice, she isn't just a collaborator on the soundscapes over which she sings. She's often the prime source. On almost every record she's ever released, she has full production credits on almost every track. These songs are her creation from the ground up, and I think that's why, even though her music has a massive range of moods and sounds and tempos, there's a very clear connection in all of her songs. I guess what I'm trying to say is Björk has a tone in the way that guitarists do. The second one of her songs come on, there's no question who it is, and that sort of cohesion across as diverse a catalog as she boasts, well, I mean, it's a pretty rare feat. But it's often that diversity that makes it difficult for people to get into her catalog. She can be super ethereal on songs like Aurora, stripped down on the Anchor song, or darkly wild like the song Pluto. Here, check those out. Same performer. Then, of course, you have the sheer genius and courage of the Medulla album. For those unaware, it was constructed using only sounds made by human voices. Well, about 99% of it. Even what sounds like percussion are actually more akin to people beatboxing. And to do this and have the songs as impressive as they are, it goes beyond novelty to the point that it's truly stunning art. Speaking of voices, what a lead-in, right? I honestly don't know if I can think of another singer in history who treats their voice in the same way as Björk. Yes, she uses it to deliver lyrics, but I've always felt that she uses her voice as more of an instrument than other people. While some people may take her random shouts and non-lyrical vocal noises as just that, noise, the reality is she's flexing it as a true instrument. There's this artistry in the way that she moves across a soundscape, and they're also sort of songs you can constantly find new elements on. Little sound effects and touches here and there. I just love it. But there's one more thing with Björk. The words. It's rare that she has a co-writer on these songs, and when you actually listen to the words, it's hard to come up with another person who has bared their soul in a similar manner. I mean, you can look at her albums as a very clear history of her life, more specifically, her love life. From the search for love found in the words on her early records, to the bliss of true love and married life and children in the middle, then of course culminating in 2015's Vulnicura, which might be the most devastatingly heartbreaking album ever, yes, ever, you really do get the full ride and the full view into her life.
Maybe he will come out of this loving.
This is the album about the very real ending of her marriage, and the lyrics hold absolutely nothing back. This is one of those records that's actually difficult to listen to because it's so real and so painful. And I was fortunate enough to see a pair of the live performances of songs from this album, and you could see and hear and just feel how raw these words still were. In fact, Björk ended up having to actually cancel the final leg of her tour because performing the songs was just too emotionally difficult. That, folks, that is what it means to truly put your heart onto and into an album. And it's that honesty, that trust in the listener that provides the final element in making the music of Björk so wonderfully special and unique. Whether it's in the sonic or emotional landscapes she's creating, there is never a question of, oh, should I try this? She goes in headfirst and is willing to try anything, always delivering something brand new and exciting for listeners' ears. It's kind of why there are no lukewarm Björk fans. Either you're not into it, or you defend her and her music like family. It's that personal and that phenomenal. There's nobody like Björk, and I absolutely adore her music. All right, let's see, who's next? Oh, you know what? Speaking of musicians who go by a single name, let's head back towards the mainstream, like way mainstream. Look, I get it. People don't like to talk about icons when they're supposed to be super big music geeks. I deal with these people all the time. The types that are apparently too cool to admit they love something massively mainstream. People like this who are around my age somehow try and pass off that they didn't own a Vanilla Ice or MC Hammer tape in their early teens. Come on, you did. You know you did. And it's okay. We all did. Hell, many of us even had the cassette single of Baltimore's Tarzan Boy 2. Wow. Sorry. Not really sure where that came from. Let's focus. Icons. Got it. Right. Okay. See, if I'm going to talk about my all-time favorite female voices, there's no way of getting around one of the biggest names ever, as I'm a huge fan and I believe she's the voice on one of the five most perfect pop songs ever. That's right, Madonna. Well, Madonna up until about the year 2000. Her music since has been questionable at best, but just because someone loses their touch doesn't mean it overshadows their incredible contributions. I'll argue that Madonna's music was critical in the transition from disco into the pop sounds of the 80s and the 90s, and there's about a 20-year period where she could do no wrong musically. I mean, look at it. 1983 gives us her self-titled debut with songs like Borderline, Holiday, and Lucky Star. Over the next 4 years, we get two more records with another dozen top five singles. Papa Don't Preach, Into the Groove, Material Girl, Open Your Heart, so many killer tracks, and that's all before she drops Like a Prayer on the World. Her work in the 90s was equally as impressive as she ushered in the rising electronic sounds and also helped to make music a bit more risque. It went far beyond Justify My Love and Erotica because her Bedtime Stories record remains a personal favorite. And oh yeah, there was this song too. Okay. This is not a Madonna discography show, but you get the point. Madge is an icon for a reason, and dozens of her songs exist somewhere between timeless and American anthems. Yeah, I said it. Her songs have become anthems. But again, let's get back to the why. Why is she one of my all-time favorites? Well, for me, it's always been about the fact that she really has no limits as a vocalist, but also, she clearly takes her job very seriously. The latter of those 2 points might seem, I don't know, a bit silly, so let me explain. First off, she works her ass off. I think the longest she's ever gone between records is maybe 4 years. And over almost 40 years, that is an insane output, especially when you consider the genre within she works. Madonna makes pop music. Sure, it's leaned way into the electronic world over the past decade, but at its core, it's still pop music. Now consider how much pop music has changed since 1979 when she first started recording. Actually, you know what? Let me narrow this down for you. Think about the difference in the pop world between February of 1984, when Borderline is released, and March of 1990, when Vogue hits the charts. That's 6 years and 1 month difference in actual time, but two completely different sonic universes, and she dominated both of them and everything in between. For comparison, think about, well, pretty much any other pop singer not named Michael Jackson or Justin Timberlake. They rarely evolve, And when they do, it tends to sound really forced and awkward, Britney Spears. But Madonna not only evolved, she was the point of evolution. From about 1982 to around the year 2000, Madonna was similar to Prince in that she was defining trends and was absolutely what it meant to be cool. And to keep that level of quality and output, like I said, just a workhorse. And it takes very serious, disciplined work in the studio to pull that off. The other element I love about Madonna's music is that she can bend her voice however she needs it. Whether she's delivering super sweet pop sounds on Holiday or getting dark and whispery on Justify My Love or inspiring women across the world on the fiercely awesome Express Yourself, her vocal range and emotion know no limits. You might not think of her music as rallying cries, but at least once a decade, her music has become just that. I get it. Madonna's an icon, and people have gone on and on and on for pages about how fantastic she is. But I think sometimes when an artist is that big for that long, you sort of forget why and how she got to such a status. And damn it, I am a big Madonna fan, and it would be a lie if I didn't include her on this list, so I had to. Okay, so I figured I would probably be through about 7 or 8 people by now, so we're going to have to probably separate this into 2 different episodes. One more, let's see, who do we want it to be? You know what, let's go with just one more that I need to fawn over for a bit, because this is another very distinctive style of music and performing, and along with Björk, has a record that is unquestionably one of my desert island discs.
And if I'm wasting all your time this time, maybe you never learn to take. And if I'm hanging on to your shade, I guess I'm way beyond the pale.
I've spoken about the Boys for Pele album many times before, and there might not be another female voice I've listened to more in my life than Tori Amos. Among many things, the one element I think I love more than any other about Tori's music is the way that each of her songs almost feel like characters, as in a person of sorts. There's such a strong personality to each song she writes that they seem to have a life of their own. I don't know, that makes sense to me. But I think that's why I and so many others can relate to her songs on such a personal level. Lyrics aside, there's just something about the songs and how they're constructed that give them a pulse of sorts, and I've yet to find another musician able to create a similar feeling in their songs. Along with that, these personalities have a stunning amount of diversity. While many people think Tori Amos is just a voice and a piano, her catalog boasts far more than that. Don't get me wrong, I adore when it's just Tori and her piano.
Icicle, where are you going? Where are you going?
But at the same time, when she brings in more musicians around her, it's just as rewarding.
Lost in my guts, with them 9-inch nails.
It's the way her songs swell and really create an entire world around you that has had me hooked for more than 20 years. The environments that these songs breathe, and, you know, I'm really trying not to use the word magical here or the word enchanting, but there's just this vividness to the orchestration she brings that lends itself to colors and sights and even smells at times. Yeah, I said it. There are Tori Amos songs that I feel have a very distinctive scent to them. The fact that the songs touch on such a sensory level really allows you to get lost in them in a very unique manner. I mean, we all talk about getting lost in a record or seeking sanctuary in music, but the records of Tori Amos provide that for me in a bit of an extreme manner, I suppose. I mean, with some of these records, if I find a quiet room, close my eyes, and really sink in, they truly take me to another place. There are just these incredible moods and this energy, whether she's working in a very dark, morose tone like on Baker Baker, letting things soar on Happy Phantom, or just getting sly and menacing on Little Amsterdam. I mean, The scenes and the feelings she conveys are endless. Then, of course, there are moments like Hey Jupiter that just crush you.
All you blue thought we both could use a friend to run to. Hey Jupiter, nothing's been the same, so are you same? Now we're through, thought we both could use a friend to run to. Hey Jupiter.
I mean, we're talking about someone who can sing from the deepest notes all the way to the top of the scale, and that lends even more diversity and passion to each track. Passion, passion! That is the word I've been digging for. You cannot deny the passion that Tori Amos puts into every note of every song, and I think it's because she feels that each track deserves full attention, and it should be just as impactful as the next, and there should never be any filler songs. But that passion goes both ways, as I have to note one rather unique observation I've made over decades of seeing Tori perform live. Never, never have I seen a crowd react the way I do at Tori shows. Never. There isn't another performer or band out there that seems to have connected with an audience remotely close to how deep those ties run with Tori and her fans. I mean, I've seen people cry in excitement for their favorite pop stars, but at Tori shows, the tears are far different. They're tears because her music touched lives so deeply. It saved lives in some cases. And it's almost like we all know that one truth, and her shows are sort of a safe place to let all of those emotions out, to sort of be broken together. And I think Tori knows it too. Seriously. It's not a rare occasion to see someone have a total emotional breakdown or spend the entire concert in tears. And after the show, they'll say it was the best concert they've ever been to. Her music touches people that deeply. And at the same time, most Tori fans are fiercely protective of her in a way. It's kind of hard to explain, but the bond between musician and fan is unlike anything you'll experience. Passion. That was the perfect word. The way she treats her songs, the vulnerable strength she brings to each track, the way that she cares for her audience. There's only one Tori Amos, and for the majority of my life, her albums have been almost in daily rotation. So, looking at the list, I really feel like I have to wrap things here because the list of female performers who have impacted my life and music is pretty massive, and I don't want to keep you guys forever. We'll do more next time. Don't worry about it. I mean, I want to talk about Billie Holiday and Tanya Donnelly and Estero and Liz Phair and Janis Joplin and X-Ray Specs. I mean, the list really goes on and on. So, the next podcast, you know what? I'm going to take a slight continuation. Next time around, I'm going to discuss female performers who don't get the credit they deserve. We're going to go with some of the smaller names you really, really need to know. Be sure to hit me up on Twitter, though, at GetEarFuel and at The Daily Guru, and let me know the female performers most important to you and your life. And also, if you're a Facebook type, you can join the discussion by searching EarFuel or The Daily Guru and come say hi or leave weird comments, whatever you want. Now, before we wrap the episode, I do, of course, have your weekly EarFuel listening assignment. For those of you new to the podcast, each week I assign an album to listen to in full, beginning to end, without any distractions or interruptions. It stems from the fact that these days, music has become largely relegated to a background task for most people. You're driving, you're at the gym, you're at work, whatever. And this assignment is about taking some time each week to consciously listen to music for the sake of the music alone. This week, sticking with the idea of my favorite female performers, your listening assignment is the Cranberries' superb 1993 debut, Everybody Else Is Doing It, So Why Can't We? I get it. Even the mere mention of the Cranberries brings certain moments of their catalog to mind, Zombie, and everybody is familiar with Dolores' voice. But this album is one of the finest moments of the decade and easily holds up more than 20 years later. Let's first take a moment, though, to remember that there was a sound in the rock style that wasn't grunge in the early 90s. And it's one of the best examples of how pointless genre titles are. I mean, get this. They called the Cranberries alternative rock, but they gave the same genre name to bands like Smashing Pumpkins, REM, and the Spin Doctors. It's just a bit too broad a brush to paint with for me, but I digress. Back to the point. A bit rock, a bit folk, a bit psychedelic, and a bit... I don't know, almost electronic at times. The formula for the Cranberries is certainly unique, as they could write bright pop numbers just as brilliantly as melancholy songs of loneliness, and it's often difficult to tell which is which with them. They bleed into each other. But when you step back and look at these songs, they're almost minimalist in many respects. The band were able to do so much with so little musically, as the arrangements are sparse, but never lacking. To me, this album is more about the tone and emotion within the orchestrations than the complexity of riffs found with many of their contemporaries. The band is almost blues-like in that sense, as they're clearly conscious of the power of the places where the music isn't, but it's also about their musical range. Sure, they can write one hell of a pop song in Dreams or Linger, but they can also do things like the almost waltz of I Will Always, to the dreamy Put Me Down, to the fast skip on Wanted, all of which lock perfectly together in a record that just begs for the repeat button. But the voice of Dolores balances and complements every musical setting in the most perfect manner. Beyond her seemingly endless vocal range, she's able to bring a power that will rattle the walls, yet seems simultaneously vulnerable. When she lets her voice move where it wants, you can feel it being guided by the music and intensity of the lyrics, and yeah, there's just so much unchecked emotion in her delivery style. And then you have the lyrics, mostly of heartbreak, frustration, and longing. They're written simply enough to have a universal appeal, and yet it's the way she breathes life into these words that make them so profound and powerful. It's almost impossible to discuss the music of the 1990s without pointing to the Cranberries as a massive influence on both music and culture. Their big hits are instantly recognizable, and the deep cuts are some of the finest of the era, both of which can be found all over Everybody Else Is Doing It, So Why Can't We? This is one of those albums that everyone has to hear firsthand to properly appreciate, and if somehow you don't know it end to end, you need to change that right now. Thank me later. So that's all for this week. As always, the podcast is available in the iTunes and Google Play stores, along with at getearfuel.com. That is your weekly Ear Fuel. Share and enjoy.